Should Christians support Donald Trump? That's what I want to talk about today. I've changed the title of the sermon to not be so
Oh, you need
offensive.
to be here
So,
for this.
this sermon, I believe, needs to be preached. I think that there's a lot of blind support out there for President Trump with people that just overlook things in him that they would not overlook in somebody else. If Barack Obama or somebody else was doing the same things, they would certainly not overlook that. And really, you have something. It's called, you ever heard of the Hegelian dialectic? It's kind of the idea, it was a political philosophy a long time ago, that if you want to change a culture, you swing the pendulum really far one way, and then whenever it swings back, it doesn't come back as far. And then you start from the new equilibrium, and you keep moving it out, and you every time you come back a little bit, but it's worse than it was before. And nowadays, I think, and I'm gonna prove everything I say in here, but I think if you would have asked Christians 4.5 years ago, 4 years ago, or whatever, would you support a president that did these things? They say, absolutely not. No way, right? They'd never do that. But now that it's their guy in office, then it's a different story. So it's quite concerning to me. I'm gonna prove everything that I have to say in this sermon, like I said. Christians had a plausible excuse, I think, for voting for Donald Trump in 2016. There were reasons not to, and I didn't myself, but he did say a lot of good things, and he made a lot of good statements that most of which did not turn out to pan out. And but I would say this is my opinion, there's no excuse for supporting him after you hear this sermon. So or this series would be three sermons. Because once I make my case, and I'm just gonna show you facts about President Trump. And I'm gonna prove it. I've got about 170 citations in here with news articles, his own Twitter feed, some quoting his, it's his own words, YouTube videos where you can watch him say these things himself. So I won't say anything that I cannot prove. And really, I guess the sermon probably is as much of a rebuke or more of a rebuke of Christians and conservatives that should know better than it is of President Trump himself. I'm just going to read you the table of contents and just to show you where I'm going. And all the statements I'm going to make here, remember, I'm going to prove as we go through this. So I'm not going to prove them all right now, but I'm going to prove them as we go through this. So first of all, I'm going to talk about how it's not wrong to criticize a wicked ruler. And we're going to do that today. I'm going to show you a lot of examples in the Bible of that. And then I'm just going to show you that Christians everywhere are praising Donald Trump, about 70% of them, even to this day after all these things have happened. And Christian leaders, so-called, the mainstream big leaders are behind him, many of them. And I really think all that is about is to sit at the king's table. They'll support him no matter what because they want to be in the White House prayer meeting or prayer breakfast or be in his advisory panel or whatever. So let's just look at a few things about Donald Trump. First of all, and I'm just going to say it how it is, he's an ungodly reprobate. And I'm not trying to slander him, I'm not trying to be mean, but it fits the bill. He's an adulterer, which I'll prove. He's a blasphemer, which I'll prove. He's a murderer. He's an unrepentant sinner. He has a filthy mouth. He's a proud, arrogant, egotistical man. Like I said, I'm just stating a fact here. I'm not trying to slander him. I'm not calling him names. He's a liar. He is or was friends with desperately wicked men. He does not have control over his tongue, which I think anybody would probably not disagree with. He encourages the ungodly and unwise practice of taking on debt. He refers to himself as the king of debt, and he loves debt. Nobody's better with debt than he is. Nobody's better than anything than Donald Trump is, and he'll tell you that. I've got quotes for you. Nobody knows more about this than I do. Nobody's better at me than over and over. Anything you can imagine. Nobody loves the Bible more than me, Trump says. I mean, I'm telling you, I'm not kidding you. I'll give you the quotes.
No.
I will give you the quote. Nobody loves the Bible more than me, he said. Wow. You know, like Matthew Henry spent his entire life writing, volumes of commentary, but he didn't love the Bible like Trump loves it. Let me tell you what. Anyway. President Trump is not pro-life in practice. Now, I'm not saying he's totally pro-abortion or something like that, at least in his rhetoric, but when it comes down to it, when the rubber meets the road, he's not really all that pro-life. He's not pro-gun. And I'm going to show you five examples of this. He's called for outlawing the sale of rifles to adults aged 18 to 20. So he wants to make it so you have to be 21 to buy any guns. So he's outlawing, I mean, you send these guys over to foreign wars, but they can't buy a rifle in this country, right? He's called for universal background checks for purchasing guns. He has signed a law, an executive order banning bump stocks, which allows you to fire a semi-automatic rifle faster. He's publicly advocated taking guns from people without due process. He's actually said those very words: "Take the guns first, do due process next." He's called for the red flag gun laws, which are laws that you can take somebody's guns away without any proof. You can ju if they deem you based on somebody else's testimony to be a danger to yourself or others, they can come and they can take your guns, and then you have to prove that you're not crazy. And it's pretty hard to prove to a government, if they don't like your positions on things, that you're not crazy, right? He's not fiscally conservative. Now, this isn't a Christian thing per se, I suppose, maybe from maybe the debt aspect, I suppose, but a conservative thing, right? I mean, aren't conservatives supposed to be about small government? But President Trump is not fiscally conservative, and I'll prove it to you. He's spending $1 trillion per year. I mean, he's going into debt. He's taking us into debt, $1 trillion per year. Trillion-dollar deficit every year. I'll prove it to you. He believes that he has unlimited power as president. I'll give you his own quote to state that. He is a hypocrite. He rightly said that the stock market was a big, fat, ugly bubble in 2016, and then he claimed it for his own after he got in, and considers it a measure of his success, which is the same stock market. I'll show you charts of it, and I'll ask you to identify the election of President Trump on the chart, and you can't do it. It's the same chart. It's going on the same thing. It's been going that same way for years. It was big and fat and ugly before he got in, and it's the same thing now, only it's wonderful, it's beautiful, it's the best thing ever, you know, best economy ever. He rightly said that the unemployment numbers were fake under President Obama, and he was right. But no sooner, I mean, within like 2 months of getting into office, and the unemployment numbers come out, and they're touting them and they're bragging about them. And one of the reporters asked, "Well, didn't you criticize President Obama and say that all the numbers were fake back then?" And his spokesperson says, "Yes, I talked to the president about this, and he said, you can quote me directly, they used to be fake, but they're not now," or something to that effect. I kid you not. I kid you not. Wow. You probably wouldn't believe half this stuff unless I gave you the quotes, and that's what I'm going to do. He rightly criticized President Obama for never reaching 3% GDP growth per year. But you know what? President Trump has not reached 3% GDP growth per year either. 2.9 last year was the highest, 2.4 or 5 the year before that. We have had a quarter over 3%.
What's GDP?
Oh, gross domestic product. It's the measure of the output of the economy. He rightly criticized President Obama over the size of the national debt numerous times, and now it's at 22.5 trillion, right? Adding a trillion every year. He rightly condemned the Federal Reserve for keeping interest rates low and for doing QE. QE is quantitative easing, which means money printing, and he condemned them many, many times over the years. And you know now what he calls for? He wants low interest rates, and he's calling for QE. He literally said the Fed needs to lower interest rates and do some quantitative easing, and he condemned them for doing that same thing before he was into office. And then this is kind of a trivial matter, but he condemned Obama repeatedly for how much golfing Obama did in office. And you know what? Big shocker. President Trump is on par, so to speak, on track to golf twice as much as President Obama did while he was in office. Not a huge thing, but still, I mean, come on. So, despite all this evidence, and I'll give you the evidence as we go through this, President Trump said when he was candidate Trump, quote, "I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and I wouldn't lose any voters." And I think he's right. I think he really is right. I don't think he would lose many voters if he did that. We're going to talk about how showing partiality is sinful and we shouldn't do that. And then we're going to talk about how President Trump, I believe, is part of God's judgment on this nation, because God gives us leaders that we deserve and that we need. Okay, so I'm not saying that President Trump has not done anything good. I'm not saying that at all. He's done some good things, and then that's fine. He did cut taxes, which is good. That's a good thing. But the problem is the tax cuts only caused the deficit to explode out of control because they didn't reduce spending along with the tax cuts. So that's one of the reasons why the budget deficit's going out of control, because you cut taxes and decrease the revenue coming in, but you keep spending the same or spending even more. And so that's not a good thing. He has cut some regulations. I did read the other day numerous regulations about the environment and about emissions and various things. And so I think some of those things are good, and that's fine. But I would say that none of these things, none of these good things that he's done, make up for the, quite frankly, his wickedness. And I want to say wickedness, I'm going to show you. I mean, wickedness, like sinfulness, and his disastrous policies, which are just continuing to lead us down this path that we've been on for a long time. Like I said, every single thing in this sermon is going to be backed up with sources. I've got over 170 citations in here. So I've put a little bit of time into this because I think it's important to me. I think it's important that people know these things, because there could be many people out there that support the president, but they just watch the news and they get the highlights and they read the news that's favorable to them, and they might not know half of these things. As a matter of fact, there's another thing I'm going to add in here. Somebody just mentioned it to me just this afternoon. I didn't, if I knew it, I'd forgotten it. I just saw a video of President Trump holding up a sodomite flag, the rainbow flag, the LBGT flag, and it says LBGT for Trump, and he was touting it in a rally. And he said that if Caitlyn Jenner, which is Bruce Jenner, if that freak came to Trump Tower, he'd let him use whatever bathroom he wanted. He wouldn't have a problem with that. He's got no pro he loves the sodomites. He loves the LBGT. He's got no problem with that at all. So pretty much on every metric that's important to professing Christians, abortion, the gay marriage, the spending, right? The fiscal conservativeness, what's it, gun control, abortion, all these things. None of these things he's any good on. And some of them he's outright terrible on. And yet, everybody keeps supporting him for some reason. I don't quite understand why. So don't shoot the messenger if this sermon offends you. I have never been a supporter of Donald Trump. I did like some of the things he said while campaigning. I loved how he discredited the media, and he's masterful at that. And so he was entertaining and all that. But the thing is, I didn't vote for him because I could know him by his fruits. I could see things that I could tell what kind of a guy he was. And I'm going to read something to you that I predicted about Trump's presidency in a Bible study. This was in the study on Isaiah 40, part 1. You can listen to it minutes 51 to 53. This was done only a week after he was elected on November 16th, 2016. These are my own words. I said, "My prediction is that nothing will change. Nothing. In 4 years from now," I could be wrong, and this is not a prophecy, so I'm not a false prophet. This is just my guess, okay? Nothing will change. In 4 years from now, the military will be bigger than it is now," which he's already promised to do that. And the military is much bigger, right? Obama decimated it, and he's built it back up. So that was shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. "We're still going to be at war in the Middle East." Check. "Obamacare will still be in place, or at least most of the parts of it will still be in place." Check. "There will be no wall on the southern border." Check. "There will probably have been no deportations or very few of them." Check. He's actually deporting people at a lower rate than Obama did, believe it or not. And I've got the proof for you. "Nothing is going to change. Abortion will be legal, of course." Check. "Gay marriage will be legal, of course." Check. "The debt will continue to climb." Check. "The debt ceiling will be raised every single time it comes up." Check. They just postponed it until 2021. There is no debt ceiling now for the next 2 years. It's crazy. That's my prediction. Nothing will change. And then somebody asked a question. "Will any significant department of the federal government be dismantled?" My answer, no. I don't think any. I think we'll still have the Department of Education, check. Of Energy, check. Commerce, check. Health and Welfare, check. All Planned Parenthood, I'll betcha, will still be federally funded. Half a check. Nothing will change. That's my prediction. So we'll see. Let's see. 2020. We'll see if I was right. Now, it's not even 2020 yet. It's 2.5 years later. But still, I pretty much could see what was going to happen. And it didn't take any kind of a genius. I just know that pretty much none of them do anything different. They all get in, they just do the same thing, right? So all the predictions were right, with the exception of the partial exception of the Planned Parenthood funding. The Trump administration has enacted a policy that withholds funds from Planned Parenthood and other family planning agencies if they refer women for abortion. You can read about that in this article called "New Trump Rules Prompt Planned Parenthood to Forgo Federal Funds." That was out of The Hill. That was just last month. And I'll give you a Actually, I won't quote that, but you can read that article. And that, so that was good that they have done that. But Planned Parenthood does still receive millions of dollars of government money through Medicaid reimbursements. I'll give you a quote here from Wikipedia on their article on Planned Parenthood. It says PPFA, which is Planned Parenthood Federation of America, is the largest single provider of reproductive health services, including abortion, in the U.S. In their 2014 annual report, PPFA reported seeing over 2.5 million patients in over 4 million clinical visits and performing a total of nearly 9.5 million discrete services, including 324,000 abortions. Its combined annual revenue is $1.3 billion, including approximately $530 million in government funding, such as Medicaid reimbursements. So yes, they are withholding federal money from them, but they're still giving them 500 and some million dollars per year in Medicaid reimbursements. So Planned Parenthood is still being funded by the federal government. They have not ended that entirely. And then I also want to give you a quote about the deportation, because with all the rhetoric of Trump and like this is his big thing, right? Immigration and getting rid of the illegals and all that stuff. This is like one of the major things in his campaign. You would think that deportations have gone through the roof under Trump. Not the case. Here's a quote for you from The Hill. This is an article called "Trump Deporting Immigrants at Slower Pace Than Obama Report." This is from 2019, June 21st, so just a couple of months ago. It says, despite a larger number of deportations in fiscal 2018 than 2017, the Trump administration's deportation levels still fall below those under the early years of the Obama administration, according to an Axios report. Under the Obama administration, deportations by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, officials surpassed 385,000 each year between 2009 and 2011, Axios reports, citing data from the Department of Homeland Security. In fiscal 2012, deportations hit a high of more than 409,000, the outlet reports. But toward the end of Obama's second term in fiscal 2015 and 2016, deportations fell below 250,000 people per year. By comparison, ICE deportations under President Trump dropped to about 226,000 in fiscal 2017. That was his first year in office. According to Axios, this number jumped to more than 250,000 in 2018, which is still about what Obama was doing at the least of his presidency. The Trump administration hit its highest total yet this fiscal year with more than 282,000 deportations as of June, but still falling way below Obama's 409,000 and even way below his 385,000 that he did for the first, how many ever years, the first 3 years he was in office. Trump has made immigration a core issue of his administration since he took office. On Monday, he issued a surprise announcement threatening to deport, quote, millions of illegal aliens who have illicitly found their way into the United States. So whether he will or not, I'll leave that up to you to decide. I doubt it, since he doesn't tend to follow through with a lot of what he says. But anyway, you would think that immigration, he at least follow through on that. That's like his big thing, right? Build the wall and get rid of the illegals. He's not doing that. So I want to give you a couple of Bible, few Bible verses here just to show you that it's not wrong to criticize a wicked ruler. Let's turn to 1 Kings 18 and verse 18. I'm just going to give you many examples. The first one is Elijah. Elijah rebuked King Ahab. You say, well, Ahab was a wicked man. Well, I'm going to show you here that President Trump is not a whole lot better. 1 Kings 18 and verse 18. It says, and he answered, well, verse 17, and it came to pass when Ahab saw Elijah that Ahab said unto him, art thou he that troubleth Israel? And he answered, I have not troubled Israel, but thou and thy father's house, in that ye have forsaken the commandment of the Lord, and thou hast followed Balaam. So he straight up rebuked him, and he said, you're the one that's troubling Israel. You're the one that's given this country all the problems, and you're worshiping a false god. There's nothing wrong with calling a spade and telling the truth about somebody, even if they are a leader. As I go through this, I'm going to try to be respectful. I mean, I am saying what he's done wrong, but I'm not trying to call him names unnecessarily. I'm not being disrespectful. At least I'm trying not to. Then there's Elisha. Elisha called the king of Israel a son of a murderer in 2 Kings 6 and verse 32. We're going to see that this is all through the Bible, both New and Old Testament. Even our Lord Jesus Christ had harsh language for the rulers of his day. 2 Kings 6 and verse 32. But Elisha sat in his house, and the elders sat with him, and the king sent a man from before him. But ere the messenger came to him, he said to the elders, "See ye how this son of a murderer has sent to take away mine head? Look, when the messenger cometh, shut the door and hold him fast at the door. Is not the sound of his master's feet behind him?" So he calls this king a son of a murderer, right? Which is not exactly a nice thing to say. But it was true, so there's nothing wrong with saying it. Then you have a prophet that rebuked King Amaziah, 2 Chronicles 25 and verse 16. 2 Chronicles 25, 16. And it came to pass, as he talked with him, that the king said unto him, "Art thou made of the king's counsel? Forbear, why shouldest thou be smitten?" Then the prophet forbare and said, "I know that God hath determined to destroy thee, because thou hast done this, and hast not hearkened unto my counsel." And I think the same thing. I think that God, and I don't know this, but I know based on what the Bible says, let me put it this way, I wouldn't be surprised if God hath determined to destroy Donald Trump. Because you know what the Bible says? Pride goeth before destruction. And if there's ever been a proud man that walked this earth, it is Donald Trump. And I've got the quotes to prove it, as if you don't already know that. I think anybody that hasn't been under a rock for the last 50 years, or however long Trump's been in the public eye, knows this. Ezekiel called the king of Israel a profane, wicked prince. Very harsh language for the king. Ezekiel 21 and verse 25. Ezekiel 21 and verse 25. Ezekiel 21:25. He says, "And thou, profane, wicked prince of Israel, whose day is come when iniquity shall have an end." Thou profane, wicked prince. That's what he said to the king of Israel. Daniel told King Nebuchadnezzar to repent. He told him to break off thy sins by righteousness. We won't turn there, but that's Daniel 4 and verse 27. Daniel rebuked King Belshazzar. That was Nebuchadnezzar's son in Daniel 5, 22 through 23. Because as soon as somebody hears this that likes President Trump and doesn't like what I'm saying about him, then they're going to say, "Oh, you shouldn't speak evil of dignities, right? You should not speak evil of the ruler of thy people," and so on. And I'm just showing you biblical examples of this very thing. I would not speak evil of a man that was ruling in the fear of God. I would not speak evil of a man that was punishing evil and promoting good, like Romans 13 says that rulers are supposed to do. But whenever the ruler is evil, there's nothing wrong with pointing that out. Daniel 5, 22 through 23 says, "As thou and thou his son, O Belshazzar, hast not humbled thine heart, though thou knewest all this, but hast lifted up thyself against the Lord of heaven." See, he was proud too. "And they have brought the vessels of his house before thee, and thou and thy lords, thy wives and thy concubines, have drunk wine in them, and thou hast praised the gods of silver and of gold, of brass, iron, wood, and stone, which see not, nor hear, nor know, and the God in whose hand thy breath is, and whose are all thy ways, hast thou not glorified." So he straight up rebuked him, said that you've done proudly, you've done wickedly, you've sinned, and you've not been glorifying God. John the Baptist, how about some New Testament examples? He reproved Herod for his adultery and for his evils, for all his evils, or for some of them anyway. Luke 3, 19 through 20. This is the greatest prophet that ever lived, and here's what he did. Let me tell you what, he wasn't sitting at the king's table. He was not doing as Jerry Falwell Jr. or Franklin Graham or these other guys that would praise the king. I guarantee you, if Jerry Falwell Jr. would have been alive in the days of King Herod, he would have been singing Herod's praises, saying, "What a wonderful man this is. He rebuilt the temple. He glorified the temple of the Lord. He's a wonderful man." Right? It wouldn't surprise me a bit, because he wants to sit at the king's table. I think it was this Herod that beautified the temple, and one of them did. I'm pretty sure it was this Herod. I'd have to look back at that to make sure. Anyway, Luke 3, 19 through 20. It says, "But Herod the Tetrarch, or Tetrarch, being reproved by him, by John the Baptist, for Herodias, his brother Philip's wife, and for all the evils which Herod had done." So John didn't just rebuke him for their adultery, he rebuked him for all the evils he had done. And that's what I'm doing in this series. I am rebuking our president for the evils that I know about, that are publicly known about. I'm rebuking him for them. I hope he repents. I really do. Look at Mark 6, 17 through 18. Now this cost John the Baptist his head. I hope that doesn't happen to me. Mark 6, 17 through 18. The thing is, I'm not really worried about it. There have been so many people that have said so many awful, terrible things about Donald Trump. It happens every day, all over the place, high-profile people. And so I'm not, it's, you know, it'd be different if we were North Korea, you know, or something like that. But
you can't keep up with all of them?
Oh, I don't think so. You'd have to execute about half the population, probably. So anyway, Mark 6, 17 through 18. "For Herod himself had sent forth and laid hold upon John and bound him in prison for Herodias' sake and his brother Philip's wife, for he had married her. For John had said unto Herod, It is not lawful for thee to have thy brother's wife." Told him straight to his face. Somebody should have told Donald Trump that whenever he was committing adultery against his three wives, which I'll give you a quote about that too. And then Jesus called the ruler of the synagogue a hypocrite. Look at Luke 13, 14 through 16. Wasn't the king, but he was the ruler of the synagogue, nevertheless. Luke 13, 14 through 16. It says, "And the ruler of the synagogue answered with indignation, because that Jesus had, had healed on the Sabbath day, and said unto the people, There are 6 days in which men ought to work. In them, therefore, come and be healed, and not on the Sabbath day. The Lord then answered him and said, Thou hypocrite, doth not each one of you on the Sabbath loose his ox or his ass from the stall and lead him away to watering? And ought not this woman, being a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan hath bound, lo, these 18 years, be loosed from this bond on the Sabbath day?" He called the guy a hypocrite, and he was right. The guy was a hypocrite. He would condemn Jesus for healing a man on the Sabbath, and he himself would go out and loose his ox and his ass and take it out to be watered or to be fed. Right? He was being a hypocrite, and Jesus called him that. And then Jesus called Herod a fox later on in the same chapter. He was on a roll here. Luke 13:32. They said that to get out of here, for Herod will kill thee, in verse 31. And he said unto them, "Go ye and tell that fox, Behold, I cast out devils and do cures today, and tomorrow, and the third day, I shall be perfected." I'm not even calling President Trump names. I'm just calling him what he actually is. Jesus used a derogatory term here, called him a fox, right? Because foxes are kind of wily creatures, and they sneak in there and kill the chickens or whatever. And so anyway, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. But I'm trying to tone it down a bit here, just so I can be beyond reproach and somebody can't say that I'm, you know, being disrespectful or something like that. But how many Christians and pastors are rebuking President Trump for his wickedness and hypocrisy? And I will thoroughly document his hypocrisy in this study. I don't see hardly anybody that's rebuking him, unfortunately. Let me just give you some examples of this. I kind of live in a hole, I guess, and I'm unaware of a lot of things that are going on, and I don't watch Fox News, or I don't watch conservative news. I don't really read conservative news very much. It's not conservative enough for me usually. But anyway, I was really unaware of how many Christians and conservatives love Donald Trump until I started reading Chuck Baldwin's columns, and he was talking about it, and I thought, wow, I'm surprised. I just can't. Because I know Donald Trump, and I've seen enough of Donald Trump, and to me, I'm just thinking, I can't believe this. Like, so I started looking at doing a little research myself and finding out, sure enough, Chuck Baldwin was not exaggerating when he said that most Christians really love the guy. I was surprised to find this out. Chuck Baldwin, he's a columnist. He's a pastor, a Baptist pastor. He's up in Montana now. He ran for president on the Constitution Party ticket back in 2016 or 08, maybe, 12, 2012, I think he ran for president.
He's saying that they are and they shouldn't be. What's his?
Right. Yeah. He's really come out strongly against Trump. And he's just saying that it's just pathetic of how many Christians support him and just how they lavishly heap praise upon him. I mean, some people to the point where it's darn near like he's the Messiah. Like it's crazy. But anyway, here's a poll for you. This is from the Pew Research Center. This was done in March 18th of this year, 2019. It says roughly 7 in 10 white evangelical Protestants, 69%, say they approve of the way Trump is handling his job as president, according to the center's latest polling in January 2019. This is somewhat lower than Trump's approval rating in the earliest days of his tenure, when about 8 in 10 white evangelicals, 78%, approved of his job performance, but is in line with most polls conducted by the center since inauguration. So about 70%. Getting close to three quarters, more than two thirds of evangelicals, right? The people that are supposed to be the conservative Christian types. Here's another quote from the same article. Now, white evangelical Protestants who regularly attend church, this is quite sad, that is, once a week or more, approve of Trump at rates matching or exceeding those white evangelicals who attend church less often. Indeed, in the first few months of Trump's presidency, white evangelicals who attended church at least weekly were significantly more likely than less frequent churchgoers to approve of Trump's performance, 79% versus 71%. In the most recent period analyzed, from July 2018 to July 2019, 70% of white evangelicals who attend church at least once a week approve of Trump, as do 65% of those who attend religious services less often. So, unfortunately, it seems like the more people go to church, the more they should know about the truth, the more they should be able to recognize him for what he is, the worse it is. You'd be better off not going to church. You'd probably be able to recognize Trump for what he is more than going to church. That's pretty sad, if you ask me. Not surprising, though, unfortunately. But think about it. Trump is very, very pro-Israel. And all these churches, most of them are very pro-Israel, they're very Zionist, right? So that's part of it. That's one of the reasons why they love him. And Israel covereth a multitude of sins, right? Love for Israel covereth a multitude of sins in the eyes of a lot of Christians out there, professing Christians anyway. Here's a quote from Newsweek, called "Nearly Three Quarters of White Evangelicals Approve of Donald Trump." This is from just very recently, 7/22/19, so just last month. President Donald Trump's support among white evangelicals has remained at a steady high since taking office in January 2017, according to polls. The latest NPR, PBS, NewsHour, Marist poll, from NPR and PBS, they ought to call it a Marxist poll, but anyway, Marist poll, released Monday, found that 73% of white evangelical Christians approve of Trump's job as doing, approve of the job Trump is doing as president, while only 23% disapprove, 4% indicated they were not sure. So that's almost 75%. When you get a 75, 73% approval rating, that's about as high as it gets, right? You don't get much higher than that. So that means about three quarters of, quote, Christians today are either ignorant of the truth of Donald Trump, in which I will thoroughly prove the truth of him in this sermon, or they are morally reprehensible hypocrites. I mean, one of the two. It's like either you don't know this stuff about him, or else you know all these things about him and say, "That's my guy anyway. I love this guy." I mean, there's something wrong there. It's one thing if you don't know, but if you know these things and you're still like, "That's my guy," that's a problem, I think. I'm going to give you here some quotes from Christian leaders, in quotes there, about Donald Trump. Jerry Falwell Jr., he's the son of Jerry Falwell Sr., the guy from Liberty, what's it called? Liberty University. Big leader of the moral majority, the Christian wing of the Republican Party, going way back, previous administrations. Anyway, here's what Falwell Jr. has to say. These quotes I got from Brainy Quote on the internet. Assuming they're true, I assume they're true. He says, Matthew 7:16 tells us that by their fruits ye shall know them. Donald Trump's life has borne fruit, fruit that has provided jobs to multitudes of people in addition to many he has helped with his generosity. So a lot of these guys, they love him because he's brought jobs and prosperity and everything. That's what they're really interested in, is the money, right? He's got good fruit, Falwell says. Here's another quote from Falwell. In my opinion, Donald Trump lives a life of loving and helping others as Jesus taught in the Great Commandment. He cannot be bought. He's not a puppet on a string like many other candidates who have wealthy donors as their puppet masters. Oh, like when he said we're going to pull troops out of Syria immediately and then says, oh, actually we're not. Or we're going to pull them out of Afghanistan. Oh, actually we're not. Right? Puppet on a string. Come on. The powers that be told him how it's going to be. He might have some good intuitions, I don't know, but question?
Yeah, are there really any rulers now? What is it, their bosses?
Benefactors.
Benefactors.
Yeah. The kings of the Gentiles exercise authority over them, and they that are called benefactors exercise authority upon them.
People with the money are calling the shots.
And the lobbyists and the military-industrial complex, there's just so much money to be made in there. And yeah, that's what it all comes down to, I'm afraid.
And whoever's got leverage on them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like Epstein.
You wonder about Epstein. People speculate that he was an agent of Mossad, the Israeli intelligence agency. They talk about that. And if he indeed was, because his mistress or whoever she was, her dad, I think, was a Mossad agent of some kind, and then he ended up dead too. He took a swim in the ocean, jumped off of his yacht or something. But anyway, if he was a Mossad agent, I mean, talk about the perfect deal, because you get all these politicians, all these high-level leaders, and you get videos of them doing horrible things, and then you can blackmail them with that and control all kinds of stuff. Now, I mean, that's a bit of speculation, but if that's what was going on, that's a genius plan. I mean, genius in the sense of satanic.
What's the passport he had? What about that?
He had an Israeli passport, right?
It was Saudi Arabia, wasn't it?
Oh, was it? Yeah, I heard something about that.
It was his face, but it wasn't his name even on the passport.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I hope you guys don't kill me. I voted for him, but I didn't know this stuff because I don't get Fox News, and I just trusted somebody else.
Yeah,
and I know I should have found out for myself, but I just don't. I don't have the paper, and I don't see Fox News. I know he's very arrogant, and he talks horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always thought that.
Yeah.
But the people that I trusted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's like I said in the beginning, that
I think that it's either the worst and pick the worst is, you know.
Yeah, the lesser of the two evils, and it usually turns out that there's not much difference between them and how they, what they do anyway. But yeah, it's one thing to have voted for him in the first place because he did say a lot of good things and you don't know what he's going to do and you do think he's an outsider and he's not a politician and he's not bought and all this stuff, and you find out otherwise. But so
you have all the news and all the things, unless you're careful what source you use.
Oh yeah.
I think that a person could sort all that out.
It's really
just from that, because it's
really hard to come find the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
It's not really telling you this kind of
stuff. Yeah. Here's another quote from Falwell. I feel bad for the poor guy's dad. He said, "I see a lot of parallels between my father and Donald Trump." Wow, talk about, you know, well, yeah, and speaking evil of the dead. I mean, come on. This one's from, this is an interview that they did with Jerry Falwell Jr. This was in the Chicago Tribune in January 2nd, 2019. It's called Jerry Falwell Jr. Interview, Evangelical Leader Praises Trump's Business Acumen, Saying Poor Don't Give to Charity. Question. You and other white evangelical leaders have strongly supported President Donald Trump. What about him exemplifies Christianity and earns him your support? I mean, I just don't, how can you even say that with a straight face? Like, what about Donald Trump exemplifies Christianity? Wow. Here's what Falwell said. What earns him my support is his business acumen. Our country was so deep in debt and so mismanaged by career politicians that we needed someone who was not a career politician, but someone who'd been successful in business to run the country like a business. That's the reason I supported him. Well, how's that working out for you at $22.5 trillion? You know? Run the country. Let me tell you what, the sad thing is, I think Trump is running this country like a lot of his businesses that went bankrupt. He had many bankruptcies. Anyway. Here's another question. This is from the same interview, I believe. Yeah, same interview. Question. The deficit and debt have increased during his first 2 years. Yeah, this is the answer. Yeah, Congress, the spending bill that they forced on him in order to get the military spending up to where it needed to be. He said that would be the last time he signed one of those. But he had no choice because President Obama had decimated the military and it had to be rebuilt. Yeah, making excuses for him. Let me tell you, Obama decimated the military, right? Has military spending ever gone down since, I don't know, ever? I mean, probably since World War II, I suppose. Military spending never goes down. What do you mean decimate the military? Obama spent more on the military than the next top 10 countries combined, and Trump's even spending more. But this idea that he decimated the military is insane. Anyway, what a bunch of lies. Here's the same article, another question. Listen to this. This one's going to floor you. Is there anything President Trump could do that would endanger that support from you and other evangelical leaders? Anything he could do. You know what the answer is? No. No. That was his only answer. No. Not a qualified no, just a no. Like, there's literally nothing the man could do. Nothing. Think about the most horrible thing you can think of, and even that wouldn't stop him. And he asks him a question. He does the follow-up. That's the shortest answer we've had so far. Answer. Only because I know that he only wants what's best for this country. And I know anything he does, it may not be ideologically conservative, quote-unquote, but it's going to be what's best for this country, and I can't imagine him doing anything that's not good for the country. This guy has drunk the Kool-Aid. This is like the words of somebody that's trapped in a cult. I can't imagine him doing anything bad. Nothing wrong for the country. Really? That's just unbelievable. And this guy has no discretion. Here's a quote from The Guardian in an article called Christian Leader Jerry Falwell Urges Trump Support. He's a moral person. It said, asked if the president was a good moral example, Falwell said, quote, absolutely. Ever since I've known him, he's been a good moral person, a strong leader, a tough leader, and that's what this country needs. A good moral person, huh? Let me see if you could say that about Donald Trump when we get done with this study here in a few weeks. I don't think you're going to be able to say that. And then we have Franklin Graham, Billy Graham's son. Everybody knows Billy Graham, right? The famous evangelist. Franklin's in his shoes now. Here's what he says. This is an article. This was an interview on Fox News. The thing is, you should be thanking me because I had to go through all this stuff and do all this internet search and fall and watch all these videos and type them all out and transcribe them and listen to them over and over again and make sure I got all the quotes right. And you wouldn't believe how much work I did. I had to go through one Trump speech. It was an hour and something long, and I kept clicking through to find the thing because I heard that he used the Lord's name in vain. He said GD. And one place they had the short video clip of it, but the other one they didn't. And I didn't want to put it in the outline until I've actually heard it with my own ears. And I clicked and clicked and clicked, and I finally found it. I just happened along, and I clicked in the right spot. And so anyway, I probably spent way too much time on this study, but I really wanted to prove everything that I'm saying. Okay, Franklin Graham, here's what he says on Fox News. He says, the economy, 8,000 points on the Dow. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were telling me I was saying so. That's okay. Like, what did I say wrong? Okay, anyway. Franklin Graham says, the economy, 8,000 points on the Dow. That's incredible. 31% growth. That hasn't happened since FDR. Probably another one of his favorite presidents. This benefits everybody. If you've got a 401k, you're benefiting. And listen to this. And for me, a Christian, it supports the work that we do. I'm getting rich off of Trump. I love it. Whether you're an atheist, whether you're a Catholic, whether you're a Protestant, a Jew, it doesn't matter. We're all benefiting from this man. He's a businessman, he's not a politician. And that's what I think is so good. He doesn't play by the politician's rules. He's a businessman who's trying to fix a broken system. And so as a Christian, I support him and pray for him. It doesn't mean he's perfect. He's not President Perfect, but he's got flaws like we all do. But he is certainly trying to fix this nation so it'll be better for my grandchildren and his grandchildren. So I say, God bless the man, and let's move forward. Once again, it all goes to the economy. The stock market's up. We're all getting rich, right? He's a great president. He's doing so many great things for us. You know, most people probably don't even have a 401k, or if they do, there's no money in it, right? So the average person is not making any money off of Trump anyway. The big fat cats on Wall Street are, but the average Joe, I don't think he's probably benefiting much anyway. Here's another one. This is on the same interview. He says, President Trump has been defending Christians, and I find this refreshing to have a president who's not afraid to say Jesus. Yeah, he probably would, using his name in vain, knowing him. He's not afraid to have prayers where people end in the name of Jesus. We've never had this, not in my lifetime, and he defends the Christian faith more than any president in my lifetime. Well, number one, that's not a very high bar to set anyway, but I don't know. I can't really think of a president that defended Christianity. George W. Bush would have talked a good talk as far as that goes. Talked a lot more Christian talk than Trump, but defending Christians, I'm not sure what he's even referring to there. Let's see. And then we got a guy named Ralph Reed. He's the founder and chairman of the Faith and Freedom Coalition. This quote is from The Statesman, 7/1/19. In an article called Gerson, Evangelicals Praise Trump at Steep Moral Consequence. This guy here said, and he's the founder of Faith and Freedom Coalition, so he's some prominent Christian leader apparently. There has never been anyone who has defended us and who has fought for us who we have loved more than Donald J. Trump. No one. No one. Okay. And then this one takes the cake. This is from Michelle Bachmann. Anybody remember who she was? She ran for president a few years ago. She's a U.S. Congress, used to be a U.S. Congresswoman from Minnesota. Don't ever trust a politician from Minnesota, let me tell you that much. But anyway, actually, Jesse Ventura was pretty decent, but he was an outsider. But anyway, Minnesota is extremely liberal. Now, she's a conservative, supposedly, but anyway, here's what she said. This is in an article. It's from The Hill. Michelle Bachmann praises Trump. Americans will, quote, never see a more godly biblical president. This is from 2019, April 16th. She says, Donald Trump has had the courage and fortitude, and I will say to your listeners, in my lifetime, I have never seen a more biblical president than I have seen in Donald Trump. Never a more biblical president. When we get through this study in the next 2 weeks after this, you're going to see the utter absurdity of those words. Never a more biblical president. Wow. Like I said, it's not a very high bar anyway, but still. Here's what she says in the same interview. And I would say to your listeners, we will in all likelihood never see a more godly, not just biblical, a godly biblical president again in our lifetimes. So we need to be not only praying for him, we need to support him, in my opinion. We're never going to see a more godly president. Now, that might be true, right? Because they just keep getting worse and worse. I don't know, but how could you even refer to him as a godly president? He used the Lord's name in vain. I mean, wow. Anyway. So why do Christians and pastors support and praise Donald Trump, given what we are going to learn about him in this study? And I listed off the things we're going to learn. I'll prove it later. This just reminds me of what Proverbs 29:27 says. Here's the way it should be. An unjust man should be an abomination to the just. It should make the just disgusted, not make them praise him. Proverbs 29:27 says, an unjust man is an abomination to the just, and he that is upright in the way is abomination to the wicked. So an unjust person should be somebody who is the object of disgust for a just person, right? We should look at somebody like President Trump and see the things that he said and the things that he's done and be disgusted with it, not be praising him for it. Isaiah 5:20, Isaiah said, woe unto them that call good evil and evil good. This is exactly what Bachman and Graham and Falwell and all those guys are doing. Isaiah 5 and verse 20, "Woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness for light and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter." Calling him a godly man, a godly president, it's just unbelievable to me. That's calling evil good. We're surrounded by wicked people in this country, and the reason we can know it is because the vilest men are exalted. Not just President Trump, there's plenty of others out there as well, but this is how you can know you're living in an ungodly country. Look who people's heroes are. Psalm 12 and verse 8 says, "The wicked walk on every side when the vilest men are exalted." And believe me, you're going to see, you're going to hear quotes, you're going to hear words out of Trump's own mouth, and you're going to know that he's vile. And as a matter of fact, when we get there, I am not even going to read some of the words that President Trump has said. I will spell them out to you so you know what the words are, but I won't even read them. And here's the funny thing, though. There are people out there, there are Christians out there, that if they heard me read his words, they would condemn me for those words coming out of my mouth when I'm reading his words. They'd praise him up and down, but they would condemn me for saying those words, especially if it was in front of their kids or something, right? But yet, the president can say it in front of an audience of thousands of people on TV, in front of millions of people, and he's the most godly president we've ever seen. Those that call the wicked righteous deserve to be cursed. Look at Proverbs 24 and verse 24. Proverbs 24 and verse 24. It says, "He that saith unto the wicked, Thou art righteous, him shall the people curse, nations shall abhor him." So yeah, when you call somebody like that just and righteous, you deserve to be cursed. I'm not the one that's going to curse you, but somebody will. So why do Christians support and defend a wicked man like Donald Trump, considering the following things? We're going to get into the first major section, that he's an ungodly reprobate. And I'm going to give you three reasons. And I know this is probably getting long, but I wanted to, it's not even an hour yet. So I wanted to at least get through three major things so that I don't just say about how bad he is and never actually prove any of it. So we're going to get to three things. So first of all, President Trump is an adulterer, okay? Let's look, first of all, at Hebrews 13:4. In case you didn't know, adultery is a sin. I think a lot of Christians out there have apparently forgotten about that. Because after all, he's the most godly president we've ever had, right? Hebrews 13, the same people would condemn Bill Clinton to 1,000 deaths in hell, right, for being an adulterer. But, oh, President Trump, it's okay. No big deal. Hebrews 13 and verse 4, "Marriage is honorable in all, and the bed undefiled, but whoremongers and adulterers God will judge." So he wasn't a president at that time, but he was secretly recorded on an Access Hollywood bus in 2005 saying the following. Now, he didn't know he was on record, and I realize that people say things that they wish they wouldn't have said, and if people heard him, you'd feel bad about saying it, right? But I just don't think that there is any justification for saying this ever, anywhere, to anybody. Like, you can't say, well, you know, I didn't know I was on tape, and maybe you were, you know, saying something bad about your wife. She burnt the food last night or whatever, and you'd feel bad about that. This is a different story. And you can hear him yourself. I've got the link here on YouTube. This is a YouTube video called "Trump's Uncensored Lewd Comments About Women" from 2005. You can go listen to it yourself if you want to subject yourself to such filth. Here's what he says. "I moved on her, actually. You know, she was down on Palm Beach. I moved on her and I failed. I'll admit it. I did try to bleep her." Now, they actually bleeped it out on the video. I'll give you a hint. The word starts with F, okay? Anyway, I did try to bleep her. "She was married. She was married." He wasn't married at the time. He was dating his wife now. But she was married. Right? "No, no, Nancy. No, this was, and I moved on her very heavily. In fact, I took her out furniture shopping. She wanted to get some furniture. I said, I'll show you where they have some nice furniture. I took her out furniture. I moved on her like a bitch, but I couldn't get there, and she was married. I'm automatically attracted to beautiful. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. Just kiss. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything. Grab them by the P-U-S-S-Y. You can do anything. Those are the words of your president when he didn't think he was being recorded, relaying what he did, you know, and tried to do to a married woman. That right there, I think, is the most godly president I can ever think of. Right there. I mean, that is just, that is piousness at its height.
I can just imagine him saying that.
You can hear it. I mean, this is not a quote out of an article. You don't have to take the word for it. You can actually listen to him saying it. Here's a quote from Newsweek magazine. This is an article, how many times Trump has cheated on his wives. Oh, this is not actually a quote. Here's what we know. It's alleged that Donald Trump has committed adultery against all three of his wives. And that article makes a pretty good case for it. It's pretty well publicly known, you know, that he was cheating on his first wife with his second wife and so on. So anyway, you can read the article and see what you think. But right there, that quote right there proves he's an adulterer. He was trying to move on a married woman, in his own words. He's also a blasphemer. Turn with me to Exodus 20 and verse 7. Exodus 20 and verse 7. I don't even know why I'm turning here. Obviously, I know what this one says. Exodus 20 and verse 7. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless that taketh his name in vain. Mm-hmm. President Trump, just recently, this isn't even before he was president or something, just recently, in one of his rallies that he just had, it was on, it was just last month. It was July 2019. In his rally, he used the Lord's name in vain twice. I'm going to read you the quote. One of them I had to go through, like I said, clicking in forever until I found it. Here's what he said. He was speaking about his conversation with a rich businessman. He said, quote, I said, you know, you don't like me and I don't like you. I never have liked you and you never have liked me, but you're going to support me because you're a rich guy. And if you don't support me, you're going to be so G-O-D-D-A-M-N poor, you're not going to believe it. And you know what happened? The audience in the Bible Belt booed, and they all said, this is horrible, and we're going home. No, they cheered. They applauded. They hooted and hollered when Donald Trump used the Lord's name in vain. Unbelievable. In the Bible Belt, Greenville, North Carolina. In the same rally, he was quoting a general, but still, he said this. I mean, he's relaying what a general said, referring to the bombing of ISIS militants. And he said, quote, they'll be hit so G-O-D-D-A-M-N hard. Once again, twice in the same one. Now, there have been some Christians, to their credit, that have come out against this and said that they were deeply disappointed and da-da-da. But still. And then lastly, this one's going to take a little bit more than the other ones. He's a murderer. And you think, oh, I didn't know he killed anybody. Well, I'm going to show you. It's maybe not what you're thinking, but I'll show you. Jesus said, Matthew 19 and verse 18, thou shalt do no murder. And this is not hyperbole. This is not hyperbole. He is directly responsible for the deaths of thousands of people. And I will prove it to you. And I say directly responsible, I mean directly, personally responsible. Entirely responsible, and I will prove what I'm saying here. Matthew 19:18, Jesus said, thou shalt do no murder. And Psalm 10 and verse 8 describes a wicked man who lies in wait to murder the poor and innocent. Psalm 10 and verse 8. Says he sitteth in the lurking places of the villages, in the secret places doth he murder the innocent. His eyes are privily set against the poor. And I'll tell you what, with what's going on in Yemen right now, this pretty well describes it. Sitting in lurking places, sitting in his ivory palace in the White House, and waging a war against the poorest people in the Middle East and massacring them by the tens of thousands and starving them to death. That's what's happening, and I'll prove it to you. So first of all, President Trump has continued the war in Afghanistan. Before he was president, Donald Trump repeatedly said that the U.S. needs to get out of Afghanistan. So this is only, not only is it murder, this is hypocrisy. And I'm going to read it to you out of his own Twitter feed. So here's some of his tweets. The nice thing is it's so easy to figure out what he said because he tweets like incessantly. And then somebody made a website called, I think it's called Trump Tweet Archive or something. And you can go on there and you can search it. You can find any, you search it by word or whatever. You can find all these tweets. And it really makes it a lot easier whenever you're trying to find out what he said on any given topic. This is really different than any other president because you never had presidents that tweeted like this about everything. But anyway, here's what he said. This is way back in 2012, 8/21. He said, "Why are we continuing to train these Afghanis who then shoot our soldiers in the back? Afghanistan is a complete waste. Time to come home." That was 7 years ago, Mr. President. What are you waiting for? Here's 2013, January 11th. He said, "Let's get out of Afghanistan. Our troops are being killed by the Afghanis. We train and we waste billions there. Nonsense. Rebuild the USA." This is 3 days later on January 14th, 2013. "I agree with President Obama on Afghanistan. We should have a speedy withdrawal. Why should we keep wasting our money? Rebuild the U.S. Here's March 1st, 2013. "We should leave Afghanistan immediately." That was 6 years ago, over 6 years ago. He's been in office for 2.5 years. What are we waiting for? This war has been going on for, what, 18 years? The longest war in American history? And what are we accomplishing over there? Absolutely nothing, except for killing a lot of people. Let's see, March 1st, 2013. "Yeah, we should leave Afghanistan immediately. No more wasted lives. If we have to go back in, we go in hard and quick. Rebuild the U.S. first." This is November 21st, 2013. "We have wasted an enormous amount of blood and treasure in Afghanistan. Their government has zero appreciation. Let's get out." And this is, again, November 21st, 2013, "Do not allow our very stupid leaders to sign a deal that keeps us in Afghanistan through 2024. With all costs by USA. Make America great." So he is now one of those stupid leaders, you know, that's signing deals, keeping us in there forever, right? By his own words. 2.5 years into Donald Trump's presidency, he's still killing civilians by the thousands in Afghanistan. We're not even talking about militants here. We're talking about civilians that are being killed by the thousands. And I will give you a quote here. This is from the New York Times. This is not from, you know, some Trump-hating website. Well, I guess maybe there are Trump-hating website, but anyway, this is mainstream news, right? I mean, it's not exactly, you know, just some crackpot behind a computer somewhere. Here's what it says. This is their article, "Afghan and U.S. forces blamed for killing more civilians this year than Taliban have." This was just written here about 3 weeks ago, July 30th, 2019. It says, "Afghan security forces," and let me tell you what, once again, you can thank me. The New York Times, in order to get a quote from there, you have to pay, but it pops up. I think this is the one. One of these quotes, it pops up just for a second, and then it goes away, and if you want to read it, you got to pay. So I quickly got out the Snagit tool thing, the screenshot thing. Yeah. So I clicked back over to it, screenshot the thing real fast, and snagged it over, and I got it, and I was able to. So anyway, I didn't want to pay for it.
You didn't want to pay.
I didn't want to pay for it, yeah. So anyway, I don't think that's illegal as far as I know. Okay, here's what they say. "Afghan security forces and their American-led international allies have killed more civilians so far this year than the Taliban have." So American soldiers over there have killed more civilians than Taliban. The United Nations said in a report on Tuesday, once again raising alarm that ordinary Afghans are bearing the brunt of an increasingly deadly 18-year war. In the first 6 months of the year, the conflict killed nearly 1,400 civilians and wounded about 2,400 more. Afghan forces and their allies caused 52% of the civilian deaths compared with 39% attributable to militants, mostly the Taliban, but also the Islamic State. The figures do not total 100% because responsibility for some deaths could not be definitely established. The higher civilian death toll caused by Afghan and American forces comes from their greater reliance on airstrikes, which are particularly deadly for civilians. And that's why the civilian death toll is up so high, because they're not sending troops in anymore. They're just bombing the daylights out of them and killing civilians like crazy. The United Nations said airstrikes resulted in 363 civilian deaths and 156 civilian injuries. Quote, while the number of injured decreased, the number of civilians killed more than doubled in comparison to the first 6 months of 2018, highlighting the lethal character of this tactic, the United Nations report said, referring to airstrikes. So it's still going on when Trump said, let's get out, we're wasting blood and treasure there, and so on. It's still going on, and now they're killing civilians like crazy. And he's responsible for it. He's the commander-in-chief. He's the one that he has the authority to pull them out anytime, but he won't. But the Yemen situation is even worse. In this one, he is absolutely, unequivocally, directly, personally responsible. And I will show you why here in just a minute. So Saudi Arabia, aided by the U.S. military, has been waging a brutal war against Yemen since 2015. There's a civil war going on there, and Saudi Arabia has taken the side of they're against the Houthis. They've taken the side of the other faction that's trying to get control of the government. Yemen is that little, it's on the Arabian Peninsula, right next to Saudi Arabia, poorest country in the Middle East. There have been over 17,000 civilians killed and 50,000 people starved to death by this senseless war so far, and there are millions in jeopardy of starving to death right now. Here's a quote for you from Wikipedia, the article entitled Yemeni Civil War 2015 to Present. It says, concurrently, a coalition led by Saudi Arabia launched military operations by using airstrikes to restore the former Yemeni government. The United States provided intelligence and logistical support for the campaign. We sell them all of their fighter jets, and for the longest time, we were refueling their fighter jets flying over to Yemen. F-16s can't fly that far, so they would fly partway, and then our refueling jets would refuel them along the trip. Otherwise, they would have never been able to wage this war if it wasn't for the U.S. Behind them. According to the UN and other sources, from March 2015 to December 2017, between 8,670 to 13,600 people were killed in Yemen, including more than 5,200 civilians, as well as estimates of more than 50,000 dead as a result of an ongoing famine due to the war. The conflict has been widely seen as an extension of the Iran-Saudi Arabia proxy conflict and as a means to combat Iranian influence in the region. In 2018, the United Nations warned that 13 million Yemeni civilians face starvation in what it says could become, quote, the worst famine in the world in 100 years, end quote. The international community has sharply condemned the Saudi Arabian-led bombing campaign, which has included widespread bombing of civilian areas. The bombing campaign has killed or injured an estimated 17,729 civilians as of March 2019. Remember, Trump's been in office now for 2 years at this point, according to the Yemen Data Project. Despite this, the crisis has only recently begun to gain as much international media as the Syrian civil war. The U.S. has been providing bombs to aid the Saudi forces and airstrikes in Yemen. In March 2019, this has led to the U.S. Senate, listen to this, the U.S. Senate to pass a resolution to end U.S. support of Saudi Arabia. It has since been vetoed by President of the United States, Donald Trump, and in May, the Senate failed to override the veto. So Congress passed a bill to stop the U.S. military from aiding Saudi Arabia to end the genocide there, because the Saudis can't do the bombing campaign on their own, right? So for once, Congress actually did the right thing. They stepped in and tried to stop the massacre, right? But President Trump vetoed the bill, which permits the U.S. military to continue this war that's murdering and starving civilians by the tens of thousands. Here's a quote for you. This is from NBC News, May 2nd, 2019. Trump's Yemen war policy survives Senate veto override bid. Quote, the Senate on Thursday failed to overturn President Donald Trump's veto of legislation that would have ended U.S. military assistance for the Saudi-led war in Yemen against Iran-backed rebels. But lawmakers promised to keep close watch on the administration's ties with the kingdom. While the 53-45 vote did not to override fell well short of the required two-thirds, passage of the resolution in April was an unprecedented rebuke of Trump's foreign policy and a milestone for Congress, which invoked never-before-used powers in an effort to halt foreign military activity. The United States is providing logistical support and intelligence sharing for a war that has killed thousands of civilians and left millions more on the brink of famine. So here, Trump could have, he could have even blamed it on the Congress. He could have ended the war and said, you know what? I don't like what Iran's doing over there, but the Congress has spoken. The people have spoken, and we have to end this war. No, he vetoed it. He personally vetoed it, and they couldn't override the veto. So therefore, after his veto, and that was in May, after his veto, President Trump is personally responsible for all of the murder and starvation of thousands of civilians that is happening in Yemen because the Saudis could not continue the war without the support of the U.S. military. He's personally responsible for that. It's interesting, he was interviewed on Bill O'Reilly. I saw this one a long years ago when he first got into office, and Bill was talking to him about being president, and he said something about his support for Putin, or he didn't condemn Putin, really. That is, Trump didn't condemn Putin. And O'Reilly said, well, how can you do that? I mean, the guy's a murderer. And Trump said, well, there's a lot of murderers out there, you know. Like, he said something like, we have our own share of murderers, or something like that, like alluding to the fact that U.S. presidents have blood on their hands as well. And I just thought, that's crazy. I mean, you know it, and you're stepping into office, and you're doing the same thing, and you know what's going on. It's just sickening. All right. Just one more page here. I want to get rid of the... Done with the war part here. This will go quickly. This is crazy. Check out the sources for yourself. It's hard to imagine, but from what I'm reading, it's true. President Trump is reportedly on pace to drop over 175,000 bombs during his first term in office, during a time when we're not even officially at war with anybody. Not at war, and he is going to drop 175,000 bombs on countries all over the world, in the Middle East mainly. It's just crazy. Here's a quote for you. This is a this is an article from NewsClick. It's called U.S. Government Drops 121 Bombs Every Day, reports say. Quote, the United States government under the Trump administration reportedly drops a bomb every 12 minutes, which means that 121 bombs are dropped in a day and 44,096 bombs per year. The Pentagon's data show that during George W. Bush's 8 years, he averaged 24 bombs dropped per day. Okay, remember, Trump's doing 121, right? Bush did 24, and Bush was waging two wars, two brand new wars, right? Iraq and Afghanistan. That is 8,750 per year. Over the course of Obama's time in office, his military dropped 34 bombs per day, 12,500 per year. So Obama outdid Bush, and Trump is outdoing Obama by a long stretch. This shows that even though American presidents are all war criminals, Trump is the most vicious of them all. Here is another quote. This is from, this will be the last quote. This is from Foreign Policy magazine. Donald Trump is dropping bombs at unprecedented levels. This is from 2017, 2017. So this is just only, he'd only been in office for about less than 8 months here. Here's the quote. 6 months into Trump's presidency, we now have enough data to assess his own approach. The results are clear. Judging from Trump's embrace of the use of air power, the signature tactic of U.S. military intervention, he is the most hawkish president in modern history. Under Trump, the United States has dropped about 20,650 bombs through July 31st, or 80% of the number dropped under Obama for the entirety of 2016. At this rate, Trump will exceed Obama's last year total by Labor Day. In Iraq and Syria, data shows that the United States is dropping bombs at unprecedented levels. In July, the Coalition to Defeat the Islamic State, read the United States, this is their words, not mine, dropped 4,313 bombs, 77% more than it dropped last June. In June, the number was 4,848 to 1,600, or no, 4,848, 1,600 more bombs than were dropped in any one month under President Barack Obama since the anti-ISIS campaign started 3 years ago. In Afghanistan, the number of weapons released has also shot up since Trump took office. April saw more bombs dropped in the country since the height of Obama's troop surge in 2012. That was also the month that the United States bombed Afghanistan's Mammund Valley with the largest non-nuclear bomb ever dropped in combat. I remember that when they did that. It was called the MOAB, the mother of all bombs, the largest bomb that we have, non-nuclear. This thing was enormous, like huge, physically huge. I forget, like 30 feet long or something like that. And he had dropped it on some cave in Afghanistan. What a waste. Maybe they needed to get rid of it or else they'd have to spend a bunch of time disposing of it, and they figured they may as well drop it on some poor sucker in Afghanistan. I don't know what they were doing. But anyway, Trump has also escalated U.S. military involvement in non-battlefield settings, namely Yemen, Somalia, and Pakistan. In the last 193 days of the Obama presidency, there were 21 lethal counterterrorism operations across these three countries. Trump has quintupled that number, conducting at least 92 such operations in Yemen, 7 in Somalia, and 4 in Pakistan. Hand in hand with Trump's enthusiasm for air power comes a demonstrated tolerance for civilian casualties. Increased air power over Iraq and Syria has resulted in unprecedented levels of civilian deaths. Even by the military's own count, civilian casualties have soared since Trump took office, though independent monitors tally the deaths as many as 10 times higher. In Afghanistan, Trump's tolerance for killing civilians has led to 67% more civilian casualties in his first 6 months than in the first half of 2016, according to the United Nations. So President Trump is killing innocent civilians every day in the Middle East, and yet he has the audacity to hypocritically condemn the killers in El Paso and Dayton who killed a fraction of a percentage as many people as Donald Trump has. These latest mass shootings, you know, and he condemned those people. They were sick. They were, you know, whatever, like all these horrible names. And they were, right? But I'm thinking, you do it every day. Every single day there are bombs raining down on people in foreign countries. Every day you are ruining somebody's life. Every day. And he calls these people sick that killed, you know, a couple of dozen people or something. So anyway, that's all I have to say tonight. Next week we'll pick up and we're going to talk about how he is an unrepentant sinner. Yes,
I
question.
I think those professing Christians should imagine, like, what if another nation was doing that to the U.S. so they could...
Right.
Right? It's like if they put themselves in the shoes of the Yemen civilians.
Yeah, I mean, imagine just...
China just...
We don't know them. They're just somebody...
Yeah.
Or they're not real.
Yeah.
Or they're foreigners.
Right.
Or...
Just imagine what that would feel like. Imagine if
China's
every day...
America,
yeah, if every day you hear explosions... And you're told, oh, the neighbor's house just got blown up or whatever. Or my kids just got killed. My grandkids just got killed. Their limbs got ripped out of their bodies and they got burned to death or whatever. I mean, just your whole, every day, countries all over the world.
Meanwhile,
people think nothing of it.
The people are not missing any meals.
Yeah.
Right.
They're helping this thing continue in Yemen.
Right. Yeah.
They're not missing a meal.
All and children by the tens of thousands are starving to death over there. And they blockaded the whole country. They blockaded all the ports. They won't allow food to come in. It's just absolutely horrible. And President Trump vetoed the bill to stop it. It's just crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah.